The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
We start this morning with a quick look at the Sunday newspapers and looking at the Business Post. Britain in crisis, chaos envelops our closest neighbour is one of their headlines. They also are continuing their pursuit of the PTSB story. PTSB knew of the offer before Boss Crowley's denials and O'Leary's DAA demands. At the Sunday Times, McGrath leads the EU crackdown on ticket costs, and that's something that I'm sure will be welcome. Of course, there's mention of RT in pretty much all the papers. On the Sunday Independent, the main story is violent and extreme porn set to be banned. And again, more mentions of RTE. And looking at the Irish Mail on Sunday, defrocked priest has photos of victims on phone. And of course, any of you who are followers of sport will know what a bumper weekend we are having with Dublin winning in the hurling against Galway and Tipperary failing against Clare. And the very dramatic end to the match between Celtic and Hearts as Celtic unlikely winners, it looked like a week or two ago, of the Premier League or the Premiership in Scotland, came home the winners, and unpleasant scenes at the end of that match. Leinster had a bumper win against Ospreys, and so much more in the Sunday papers if you're a fan of sport. But I'm joined now in studio by a journalist, former CNN anchor, Gina London. Gina, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pat. Good to be here with you.
You've been going through the papers. What tickles your fancy?
Well, I don't know if it tickles my fancy because it's frustrating. And as you said, it's something that I think a lot of people will be interested in having some more resolution on, and that is in the front page of the Sunday Times, as you mentioned in your headline overview, the McGrath story of trying to close the gaps on the current Digital Services Act. It's been in place since 2024 around consumer practices for ticket sales for the concert goers. And concert promoters will be now required, if this goes through in his legislation from McGrath, who of course is Ireland's European Commissioner for Justice. It's supposed to be actually formally submitted by the end of the year. But the idea here is to try to get the ticket pricing dynamic, as they call it, pricing systems, more in line. And there's also real support from music stars like Ed Sheeran and Oasis and Harry Styles. They've also signed a letter back a few months ago to encourage that there's this change, because if you're a ticket buyer like I am, and you go online and you're trying to get onto the sale and then you wait in that queue and suddenly it comes up from what you thought it was going to be. For example, it says in the Oasis reunion tour last year, some standard admission tickets were €86.50. And then when you actually get into the opportunity to buy that very same ticket, it's rocketed up to €400. Wow. And so this is a practice to try to get
that changed. Now, we're all familiar with dynamic pricing from airlines, for example.
Yes.
If you book in September for the following summer, you're going to do well. If you book in June for July of this year, you're going to pay through the nose.
Yeah, that's scarcity pricing, yeah, is we also call it. But the idea, though, that it can go up in just a number of minutes or even just while you're waiting on the queue is something that is really alarming to consumers. And so to try to make these practices
more transparent.
But this seems
to be a trend in virtually every commodity. I mean, the idea, you're buying a house, someone puts it on the market and they say the house is going to cost €400,000. And then you say, well, I have €400,000. I'll go in and I'll buy it. Oh, no, you won't, because we have a Dutch auction going on. So in a sphere where there isn't really a fixed price on anything.
Well, that's correct. And so this isn't necessarily looking at the housing prices situation, but it is looking at when you have an online representation, and then as a consumer, are you being given what the real facts are? Is it clear information? What's the pricing? Where is it going to be actually sold? And it's really difficult when you're a consumer and you're trying to get things online in particular. That's why the Digital Services Act that I mentioned, which was already been in place from the European Commission, that they were saying that these types of online platforms aren't supposed to be able to have any way to be not protecting people. And this is an opportunity to try to, again, eliminate those, what they call dark practices, manipulative design, and unfair personalization. So knowing what you're looking to buy and then ratcheting up those prices just based on your cookies.
Yeah, because you like a particular act, therefore we're going to offer you a ticket at an inflated price because we know you desperately want it.
Exactly. It's not consistent pricing for different people, like you were saying.
Now, the Sunday Independent, violent and extreme porn set to be banned. This is a move by Jim O'Callaghan, the Minister for Justice.
The Minister of Justice has been speaking to the Gardaí, and they've told him that there is a direct link between online pornography of a very serious, violent and extreme nature and young men inflicting, consequently, serious sexual violence on women. And so he also has come forward with number of children statistics in the last 2023 and 2024 going up by 40% for those under 17 who are needing support for sexually harmful behavior. And he's linking it directly, as you mentioned, to this extreme violent pornography. And so the legislation that he's expecting to propose before the cabinet in the next 8 weeks is designed to make it a criminal offense to possess or distribute any of this extreme or violent pornography, which I won't get into details because it is sure. Disturbing to even read about it and imagine that it links but to behavior.
It's extraordinary that when you even come to mainstream family events like the Eurovision Song Contest last night, there was a song there, Choke, and this seemed to be a reference to sexual practices. You know, there's a lot of unsavory stuff which is going mainstream in a way you never would have expected or found acceptable.
The easy access to porn online and the lack of the ability to quickly regulate it and be able to prevent, especially people, children under 17, being able to see, as you mentioned, strangulation, knives, things that are very disturbing, again, that I don't want to say on a Sunday morning. This is really alarming. And so the act here that he's proposing is to not get into morality at other levels, but into these extreme forms and to limit access or possession or distribution for anyone who could get it under 17.
Now, I mentioned the Eurovision Song Contest. Were you watching last night on BBC?
I confess I did not. I was busy watching RTE's. Kidding. The Lovely Horse program. No, I didn't. I was at an event last night, so I confess I did not watch
Eurovision. Well, for those who didn't watch it, I mean, the result was emphatic for Bulgaria. A song called Bungarunga by a woman called Dara, D-A-R-A. So have a listen. Okay, a dance tune, Bungarunga it's called, not to be confused with Berlusconi's Bunga Bunga parties he used to have. Interesting, looking at the voting, the jury votes put Israel in 8th place. The audience votes, and this will give you an indication of how successful a boycott it might have been of Israel. The popular vote, Israel came 3rd, and overall they came 2nd.
Well, arguably, and I have a full disclosure, a very good friend who's Israeli who wouldn't be supporting Netanyahu's practices, but would have been actually very supportive of the Israeli act. And she was really thinking that they might even, because of the popular vote and not the politics, because she thought the act was so strong itself, she expected it to come in 1st. So there you go. 3rd's not too bad for a situation with such conflict in Israel at this point.
But it's a question that remains unanswered. Why ban Russia for its invasion of Ukraine and then not ban Israel for its behavior in Gaza?
Absolutely. And this is the inconsistency of geopolitics that we can talk more about it at another time, but absolutely.
Anything else you want to mention? I mean, there's loads of RT in the papers.
There's loads of RT. I mean, look, they've got the Oireachtas Committee is going to be holding hearings this week over the salaries issue. And RTE, if this is a hangover from 2 summers ago, I feel like we're coming into another summer about the pay and the pricing and the transparency of a tax-supported entity.
Now, you have picked out another story on the front of the Irish Mail on Sunday. Defrocked priest has photo of victims on phone.
Well, this is another disturbing one. And this one is, we've got, not only is this this, they name him, so I guess we can say it as well. This former president of a seminary in Waterford and Lismore, Michael O'Connor, who's still living apparently in a church-owned property rent-free, even though he's been dismissed from the priesthood. This article talks about, and they've got the photo itself, one of the photos anyway, of him when he was a priest and much younger, with the pixelated photo of an alleged victim. And it's just talking about how this man continues to live and is also denying some of the accusations, but the victims are coming forward. And it's a very disturbing feature about how this is, has he been redeemed? Has he been, is he being defrocked in one way, but also being essentially permitted in another by still living in the home? It's an, it's a very interesting story, and it's quite conflicting when you think about this, what are the repercussions? Are there any? And what is the responsibility of the church to the victims around something like this?
This even is a scandal that just goes on and on.
The scandal is endless until things are really taken real criminal actions.
Now, the politics of revenge, I want to talk to you about the United States, because given that you're here and you're a great student of your former country's activities, Trump's politics of revenge continue unabated.
They continue, and the money that's put in behind it is just phenomenal and staggering. So what I could lean to as an example most recently is yesterday's defeat of two-term Senator Bill Cassidy in Louisiana, which just got hit a couple of weeks ago by the Supreme Court decision around gerrymandering. But in the meantime, Bill Cassidy was one of the few, the handful of Republicans who voted to convict Donald Trump after the January 6th riots. And as such, he got in, of course, Trump's disfavor. And Trump backed a U.S. representative named Julia, what is her last name? Letlow. And she ran as his primary challenger when the election was yesterday. And this was a very high-financed campaign. They spent, between the two of them, $16 million. And Massey conceded last night. Now, excuse me,
Cassidy.
We'll talk about Massey in a second, because he's up on Tuesday. But so Bill Cassidy, physician, who also tried to redeem himself, by the way, Pat, by voting to approve the very controversial appointment to the health department of RFK Jr., anti-vaxxer.
Well, that's what I found disgusting about Cassidy,
well,
by the way.
That's it. So on
he's
one
a doctor.
Hand, yeah.
And he votes for an anti-vaxxer to become health secretary.
Exactly. On one hand, he had conviction when he voted to convict against the riots of January 6th, but then he was like, okay, I better get myself back in Trump's good graces and vote. He was the deciding vote, in fact, for in favor for RFK Jr. And then, because he is a physician, he has been critical of some of the policies, as you would hope to expect, that RFK has been putting into place. But it wasn't enough to redeem him with Trump. Trump got an opponent in the primary, and he was primaried out yesterday. Interesting, when he did concede, though, last night in his speech, he did say that it was a democratic process, and he is not going to whine or say that the election was stolen. So that was an outgoing jab at the president. But Bill Cassidy wanted a third term, isn't going to get it. He's out. That would be the primary power play of Trump.
And it just shows that with all the tech bros and allies throwing in millions and millions of dollars, they can outspend pretty much anybody.
Well, and that leads me to what I was just misspeaking about, but foreshadowing, that Representative Tom Massey, who was the head proponent, this is a U.S. Congressional House primary in the 4th District of Kentucky. He is also being primary because he was the driving force on the Epstein Files Transparency Act. Although Massey's a Republican and would support Trump in almost every one of his other policies, he got in Trump's line of sight when he was outspoken about getting out all these Epstein files, which, by the way, of course, Trump ran on when he was running for election in 2024. But at any rate, so now, on Tuesday in Kentucky, in that district, there is a primary. And back to the money and the amount of fundraising that's going on, this is right now being talked about as the highest, most expensive raised funding paid primary race in U.S. history. With each of those, he's running against a former Navy SEAL who is right now slightly ahead of him, and they've got $5 million behind each of their races so far. Primary race, which is unheard of, but that's what we're seeing. So if Massey goes down next Tuesday, though, certainly MAGA will be taking that as another form of Trump's primary power.
Now, the difficulty I have is trying to reconcile the fact that to those of us living on this side of the Great Pond, we can see this is a man who is vain to the nth degree, who certainly has mental issues, who is greedy to the double nth degree, who is corrupt, who's a liar. And a third of the American public can't see that.
Corruption, communication, it's all there as an absolute degradation of what the U.S. stands for. And I would say, though, that MAGA is split now around the Epstein files and also the other pledge that Trump made, which is no new wars abroad. And that they are feeling, the average American is feeling that pain at the gas pump right now because the fuel prices are out of the world. It is something that we'll see as these primaries continue and lead up to the midterms in November, if there is a real backlash or if the Trump power and the Trump name and the Trump demagoguery can continue to sway enough voters to make a difference.
I mean, the people like John Ossoff, they're majoring on corruption. And I mean, it's palpable, it's visible, it's there. They can see what the Trump family and all their pals are doing, using the presidency to make fortunes, and whether or not they're, you know, given the heads up, we're about to attack Iran, watch the stock market, do what you need to do before we attack. This kind of stuff is utterly corrupt.
The amount of stock trading that has been going on by Trump, not even in a blind trust, but by the president himself that trackers are watching is unprecedented. For example, Biden nor Obama did any stock trading at all while they were in office. But the amount of corruption and the amount of people, other stock traders looking to see what the president's deciding, because if he's the president, he knows everything that's going on. And if he's making stock deals and we're watching the dollars roll into his bank account, it's just unbelievable the amount of corruption that's happened. I think the number now is $3 billion that Trump has made since he took office. It's just staggering.
It is absolutely staggering. Now, we can't not criticize European leaders because they've been, you know, toadying up to Trump as well. You know, when you have the head of NATO calling him daddy and treading softly, and other people like Keir Starmer trying to keep him happy. The only person who's standing out a little bit now, well, two people, Meloni in Italy, has been critical of aspects of Trump, and also Merz, who said he wouldn't want his child to go to the United States.
The Finnish president has been continually outspoken. Of course, the prime minister, I think, of Spain has taken
Pedro Sanchez,
who of course is up for re-election. So there's some questions about who he's playing to, because he's got a coalition party that's in opposition. But at any rate, the idea, though, that Europe has had this opportunity to make its own unification against Donald Trump and find and seek out new allies. We are seeing some change on that. Despite the initial obsequiousness of some of them, it does appear that they are reading the tea leaves that Trump isn't going to be coming to any sort of NATO aid, and his idea of being an ally is certainly something that's a question, to the extent that even just this past week, Secretary of War, Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, just turned around a group of troops that were on their way to go to NATO partner Poland for some exercises, just recently turned them back. And that's also created some concern about, well, what are we doing with our allies? Who are our allies as far as United States goes these days?
Can any future president reverse the Trump damage quickly?
No.
No.
The short answer is no. The amount of people that have been purged from important departments like the FDA or FEMA or USAID, which is completely gutted, the rebuilding of those people from an employee standpoint is going to take for some time. The rebuilding of the United States as a trusted ally or a trusted partner. Look at the talks that were happening in Iran when now suddenly then in March 1st there was a decision to bomb with Israel as a partner in the midst of those talks. I mean, there is the amount of trust that has been broken. Those bonds are going to take a long time to heal if they ever will the way they are. I think it is important, and it went over Trump's head, the way that President Xi talked about the ending, or the, what was the word he used, but the changing of the style of America, that it was in a failing democracy, or that it was, he's like, oh, that was just Biden's time. No, that was the president of China talking about how this republic is at its wane.
Yeah, it's declining.
Declining.
China is resurgent.
Correct.
Absolutely. Gina London, former CNN anchor, journalist, and broadcaster, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.